Welcome back to the After Sermon podcast. I am here with a slew of people to discuss the sermon we just had over forgiveness. We're going through the parables in Matthew. And Chris, why don't you catch us up on what we've been talking about and what we talked about this morning?
All right. So basically, we went through the parable of the unmerciful servant, essentially a king. Before that, Peter comes up to Jesus and says, "Hey, give me the lowdown on how do I forgive? Seven times or 77 times?" And we had one question come up. Is it 77 or is it 7 times 7 or 7 times 70 or 490? Really, it doesn't matter. That's not a theological issue that's of importance other than the Textus Receptus, if you really want to get into it. That's what we get the King James Bible from. I think that one has 70 times 7, which just means 490, but really isn't like a exact number of times. Textus Receptus, or the King James Version, what we get that translation from, is not the most reliable because it doesn't come from the earliest manuscripts. The 77 times comes from the latest manuscripts. And again, it's tough because there are some that translated 70 times 7 and some 77. And it's really difficult because it's such similar phrasing. But remember, the thing that is important is not the exact number, it's just a large number. In fact, if you focus on the number, you're not focusing on the intent of what Jesus was saying. He was just saying, forgive a lot. So that was the answer for that. So anyway, Jesus says, not seven times, but 70 times seven, or 77 times. And so Jesus then goes on a parable, and it's a king who he was settling accounts with the servants. And I've said before that whenever this king is doing it, he's a king. We think about like U.S. Treasury and like the IRS settling accounts, but this is a king. It was commonplace for them to, you know, use money to build roads or infrastructure or monuments to themselves, and you would give large sums of money out to do that, and it was all his money. In other words, given to Caesar what is Caesar's. No, it's literally his face is on it. That's actually his money. So that's sort of where that comes from. In this case, the guy squanders $5 billion. And I've said it's either neglect or corruption. And then the man begs to be forgiven of the debt, and the king does it. And then he turns around and goes to a guy that owed him $8,200, and he starts choking him. And then when he won't pay, he ends up, he ends up saying, okay, fine, just give me more time. And then he says, no, go to jail. And then the king says, you unmerciful servant, how could you do that? I forgave you $5 billion and you couldn't forgive $8,200. Back to jail with you. And so that's where, and then Jesus ends it on this really crazy statement. So will my heavenly Father do to every one of you, and that every one of you is all his disciples, if you don't forgive your brother from your heart. And so one of the questions that comes up, does that mean that you can lose your salvation? Well, I put it this way. That's a great question, and I don't know if this is necessarily a salvation passage, but I will say this. This is clearly Jesus talking about how great a Christian is forgiven. And so if you see your forgiveness as $5 billion, and then you see what someone has done to you as $8,200, and you don't forgive, I don't think you've understood how much you've been forgiven. And so it comes into a, you don't understand your salvation. Sorry. You don't So I think it comes to a place where you don't understand your salvation. It's very likely that you're not saved if you don't understand that aspect.
Yeah, that was actually one of the questions that people sent in. Will I lose my salvation if I refuse to forgive people? And that's kind of what you're saying is Jesus's big point is if you don't forgive, you haven't really understood forgiveness from the Father.
Right.
So that's where the issue lies. Some other people asked, sometimes continually forgiving small things can feel exhausting. So how do we as Christians, how do we find the resolve to keep forgiving someone?
Yeah, I wanted to, so I have in studio with us, I have Tony Nelson, and I also have Andrew Harbart. Would you guys, did I say it wrong?
You're great.
You're wonderful.
All right, Tony, would you explain how you were able to forget over and over and over and over and over and over, and over, and over again.
Sure. So if we're talking about forgiving small things, I think that, at least in my mind, like forgiving the small stuff was different than trying to forgive like this massive thing. Because forgiving the small things is requires like a daily reminder of things. It required, it seems so trivial hindsight looking back at things, but it just, you know, the petty stuff that we would get mad at each over, things like who you didn't take out the trash, you didn't, you know, do what you said, and you didn't go and you know, take the car to go get work done when you said you were, and just learning how to like overlook some of these things that in the grand scheme of the relationship shouldn't define or hinder how we loved each other, how we connected with each other, and overall just how we pushed forward in that relationship. And yet there were many times where it was, it almost seemed like an urgent and an important thing for me to continue to talk on things that were going wrong in the relationship. She needed to fix this, or I needed to fix that. And it always seemed like there was something urgent and important. And really, when I look back at that, there was a lot of those times that just, it's really trivial stuff, right?
So how do you keep that from snowballing? Because that's what it is, right? You have little things that jump on top of each other, and all of a sudden it seems like a huge thing.
Yeah. So how that, I guess for me, it didn't end up snowballing, was just remembering, and you have, I guess from my perspective of at the time of not being a Christian, right? So this concept of forgiveness was really foreign to me in the way that that you guys talked about it. I now understand it, but I didn't back then. So how I prevented it from not snowballing was just keeping things in proper perspective. And that, you know, there was a phrase that I used to hear that my goal was not to win the battle and lose the war. And if I'm going to try and pick and choose the fights, these were not going to be the fights that I was going to pick and choose to win. And so learning how to forgive in those moments, although could be exhausting, just meant that I needed to find places where I found joy, find a place that I could find areas to rebuild and reestablish faith, is really what I was looking for, hindsight. And instead of placing it, that responsibility on my wife and saying that, oh, you need to be the fulfillment, you need to be the person that that makes me happy, and being able to take that responsibility off of her shoulders allowed me to forgive her, because I understood that I was in that same boat. I was just kind of blind to that moment.
So I don't know if we've put this in this podcast yet, but the thing that we talked about in the sermon, well, the thing we're primarily trying to forgive, which we had the interviews for, was affairs. And so that's what Tony was just speaking into, was affair recovery, and how he was able to forgive over and over and over and over again that same thing. Because there's this piece of you that wants to bring it up again.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the whole point of that, the macro thumeo. That Greek word macro thumeo means macro, long, thumeo, suffering. You are long suffering. So every time you want to say, you want to make the other person suffer because of the pain you feel, you go, no, I won't say anything. I will hold that peace because I forgave you. I will take the debt. That's essentially what I feel like you were saying, which is just really cool. But it,
so what about like in terms of like a coworker who just slights you over and over again? How do you fix that?
Yeah, that's a great question. Maybe this is
not the right place for
it. No, it is the right place. I was like, sometimes my off-the-cuff thinking is not always the best to be put on a podcast. But I always say, my mom used to say, consider the source. So when you're dealing with somebody that's sort of a jerk, then you're like, oh, that's what jerks do. And so here's the thing. There's boundaries. Now, I want you to watch this. We do put boundaries in place, but boundaries are to protect the other person, not yourself. So if a person is doing really irritating things to you, they're probably doing really irritating things to everybody else. And so your ability to confront them in their irritating things is actually very healthy for them in the long run, by saying something, you know, when you do X, it makes people feel Y. And the reason I know that is because I feel that way. And so would you please stop doing that? And to help you understand that this is really hurting you, I don't want to be in your presence or whatever. It, now, now you have to work with this person because you're on a project or you're stuck with them, then being clear about that, but then not keeping bringing it up that I'll forgive you in advance for all the things you're going to do. And the great news about a coworker is eventually, listen, people stay in jobs nowadays for maybe
3 years or less.
Yeah, so just give it some time. That person will move on, or you'll move on or something. So again, going back to the question, is it worth the short-term battle if you want to maintain your career or job there to defeat that person and really let them have it and then lose the job or win the wars where you hang in there and you long suffer with that person. But I think it's important to share with that person that they are offending you. I feel like one of the things that we are awful with as Christians, as the rest of the world is awful, is we're passive. When someone bothers us, we just stuff it. And then eventually you just blow up at somebody and be like, when you do blah, 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 blah. And the next thing you know, you're vomiting all over them. So, let's just talk about real work environments just for a second, because I live in a church world where everyone's perfect. So,
thank you.
So, Tony and Andrew, talk to me about real work and Trevor, real work environment where you're dealing with real people that are irritating and you're sort of stuck with.
Sure. Full disclaimer, I work in a Japanese company, so the majority of people that I work with are polytheist or atheist.
Right.
And so it's odd when I'm the one Christian at a meeting, and then I almost become the tail end of jokes kind of thing.
Are you the only white person too?
Yeah, I'm the only white guy. No, I take it back. There's three of us.
Whoa.
But three? two of them live in Japan, so they don't count now. But yeah, it's challenging, right? But here's one of the nice things about this. It's really difficult to say that I believe something and that I stand by it if I never have a testing ground. It almost becomes like this cute phrase. If I never actually have to go through the process of repetitively forgiving people, then it's a nice idea. It's a concept that I think is cool. But I think what really validates the walk of faith that I've got, what validates me talking about forgiveness with these people, is the fact that I have to do it, and that it's something that always has to happen when I'm chatting with them, and has become a source of lots of conversation, because now they get to see someone who's actually doing what we say we believe, which can lead to some great conversations. But it can be irritating to answer that question directly. Very irritating.
Yeah, I'll say for me, I've been really fortunate that I have not had too much workplace conflict to deal with. About the worst I've had is a handful of emails that may be a little bit snarky. Sometimes I'll fire back a response a little bit too quickly, but generally I just try to give it the night, give it several hours, calm down, and I just try to respond with grace. But again, thankfully it's not something I've experienced too much in the workplace.
Yeah, I always have said never write a negative email. It will always come. It will get forwarded a million times. Yeah. Your words will be taken out of context, and it's just unwise to write any of that stuff down. And then you realize, I probably shouldn't have said that.
Or text.
Yeah, or text. Negative. I always get the negative texts eventually. They all come back to me.
Yeah.
Oops.
Yep. So Chris, you brought up this idea of boundaries, and I think this is kind of a good segue into one of the other questions that was asked about. We have this cultural saying where we say, I'll forgive you, but I won't forget. Mm-hmm. And I think boundaries kind of gets at the biblical answer for this, but how do Christians deal with that kind of thinking of like, I can forgive someone, but I'm also going to like hold it over their head, so to speak.
Right. So I feel like, remember Jesus said, neither will my heavenly Father forgive you unless you forgive your brother from your heart, which means it has to be really sincere. You can't fake it, which is really painful, because yep. It'd be really nice if you just fake it.
Yeah.
Or like, unless so will my family father do to you, unless you at least act like you like the person. Or something would have been way more convenient. I forgot where I was going with that.
I think it's about forgiving and forgetting. So yeah, I think forgetting is kind of impossible. That's saying that it did happen to begin with.
Right.
What he's asking is that you wipe yourself of that resentment, and that forgiveness is wholehearted.
Right. Yeah.
Forgetting implies that it never happened.
Yes.
And that doesn't create true change in the person who had the slight to begin with.
Right.
So how do you walk the line between bitterness and on the one hand, but also like setting healthy boundaries? Like you talked about the boundaries of a certain person.
Well, let me just talk about the boundaries. Boundaries are not set to protect yourself. They're there to protect the other person. Jesus protects you, which is why you don't look for vengeance. Vengeance is the Lord. Now, justice is God's job. Your job is to look after, think of others, count others as more significant than yourself. Now, one of the ways you do that is you set up boundaries for them, not for you. So the boundary for them is, listen, the way you're acting or what you've done, if you continue to do that, it's going to imperil your own life. So for your sake, let's think of it in homeless terms. You know the homeless guy that comes up, you don't want to give him food just because you're angry and mean, all right? That's one reason. Or you don't want to give him money because you don't want him to go and buy it on drugs. That's protecting him. So it's the same action, but it's a different heart. Like, does that make sense? So in the same way with forgiving people, it's like I can set up a boundary that is like, I think you set up a really great one, Andrew, and with Nicole. In fact, can you talk about that real quick, about the boundary set up with her when she kept texting her, what would you call that person?
I have some words
for her. Lover, I don't know if that's the right word.
A fair person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The politically correct term is a fair person. The other guy. Thank you.
The other guy.
I got stuck. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, I mean, so the context for this is she was confronted about the affair, and then 2 months later, she was still texting this guy. And that was just killing me, being with her day in, day out, knowing that it was still ongoing in some small sense.
And eventually, a constant stab.
It was pretty much like a constant stab. Yeah, that hurt almost more than finding out the fact that it was even just a few text messages here and there. So eventually it came down to me being a little bit more forceful than I had been, showing perhaps a little bit less grace and a bit more truth, and saying, your parents are ready to come pick you up, and they're going to take your phone from you, you're not going to have any electronics, you're going to go home, you're going to sit at their house for however long it takes for you to figure this thing out. This is not a threat of divorce, that's still not on the table, but you're not going to keep living in this house and doing what you're doing. So change your behavior or get out was kind of what it came down to. And it sounds maybe a little heartless the way I'm saying it now, but
still love him.
I said it with a lot of love and grace, I believe. I hope you see it that way.
I would hope so. I'm still here, aren't I?
So can you restate the question? Because I think I'll probably come at this from maybe a different angle.
What does Scripture say about forgive but don't forget? Does God want us to forgive the transgressions but not forget them?
Yeah, it's an interesting thing, because when I remember I used to ask this question, and I would ask it from a perspective of, well, if I actually forget that this happened, then I'm going to open myself to this happening a second time, and that's foolish, right? I should have lived and learned instead of forgotten entirely. And I think there's a difference between allowing yourself to be completely exposed and taken advantage of, and then kind of learning how to set those healthy boundaries. An example of this would be after the affair had happened and we decided that we were going to resolve this, we created some boundaries in our lives, much like Nicole had removed the guy from social media, so did Jessica, right? Excommunicate, for sure. But then there was also other things that we put in place, more practical things to help ensure that we never got to that point in the first place. And I kind of make a comparison to, if you've ever been to the Grand Canyon, you guys ever been out there? They have like the railing for the Grand Canyon is not at the edge of the canyon itself where you can just look right over. They have the railing several, like, I don't know, 30 yards back or something like that, because you know that when you hit that boundary, you're going to a place that you shouldn't go, and you know you're going to hit that area long before you fall off the cliff. Right. And so when you fall off the cliff, it's because you went over the boundaries and kept going, kind of thing. Yeah. So how that manifested, at least for us, has now turned into things like, I don't, and she does not go to places, like specifically for me, I don't spend time in my house alone with another woman. I don't care if she's married, I don't care if she's single or a coworker, nothing. If I'm gonna have another person there that's not my wife and is a woman, then I have a third party person there. Not because I am fearful of succumbing to lustful intent there, but just so that my wife has peace of mind in knowing that there's not going to be anything that happens, and that she has a third party person that can verify any kind of accusations that might come against me. Likewise, she does that same thing to where I have peace of mind knowing that she's going to put herself in situations that don't compromise her, because we've set up healthy boundaries and moving forward, we protect ourselves, we protect the people around us, and I think the more that you're in influential kind of situations, the more that this kind of thing tends to come up where you could potentially get attacked, because the more influence you have, the more people you can hurt when you fall. Mm. So I think it's very important, like Chris said, to put boundaries in place for others' protections and just to provide peace of mind.
That's really good. I think the main idea to get is that boundaries are not intended to be this like restrictive thing, but they're meant to be these things that give and nurture life in yourself and in your relationship. And I guess maybe coming at this from another angle, how do you do this whole forgiveness thing, this whole boundary thing, when the person that you need to forgive isn't willing to admit that they've hurt you? Because mostly what we've talked about this morning is situations in which I need to forgive this person and they're willing to admit that they hurt me. But there's lots of situations where people are like, there's stubbornness involved, or there's like an unwillingness to own up to what you've done. Like, if you've been hurt by someone who's unwilling to own up to, like, how does forgiveness work then?
Sure. This is one of the challenging things, is learning how to forgive even when you're right.
Yeah.
Right. And even to accept responsibility for those kind of situations. And I can use this in more of like a businessy. So I went to a speaking engagement one time, and I had decided to reference a gentleman in the crowd. And I pointed to the man and I said, she has this great look about her. And I misspoke and called him a her in that statement, right? And that was kind of what happened. And then I said, I apologize. And I went back and I restated the thing, but I received a message from the people that had kind of hosted me at that event. And they said, hey, we need you to give this guy a call and apologize to him because this is something he found really offensive. And I was like, it was clearly a slip of the tongue,
yeah,
right? Like, it's just, we've all kind of done that.
Yeah.
And so I remember thinking, this is a problem because this is something that's deep rooted in this guy's past.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with me. I just happen to have accidentally stumbled into this like hornet's nest of crazy emotion, right? And so I'm going to apologize, even though I correctly handled it on the front end.
Right.
I'm going to take responsibility for the fact that he's emotionally damaged and feels like and feels like I have somehow like, I guess, I don't know, hurt his masculinity. And it's just an interesting kind of dynamic, because when people don't know that they're doing things, that's the hardest time to forgive people.
Yeah.
But it's the kind that allows the most emotional freedom when that does happen, and just know, you know what, whether or not they ever come clean about this, I'm not going to have that burden, that awkward kind of contempt held against them.
Yeah.
And it's a very liberating thing if you can get to that point. But it is hard.
I think it goes back to counting others more significant than yourselves. And when you do that, it takes... Remember, it's about resentment. I feel like, forget the resentment. Because I don't... I mean, is it possible to... I mean, trauma, you remember. You can remember trauma in a... That was a part of... That's like my story kind of way, but not me kind of way. Does that make sense? Like, it's like almost a dream that happened sometime in your past. That it's back there, but you don't, when it comes up, it's not a trigger for anger or frustration.
Right.
You've forgotten that part. That's the forgive and forget. Because, I mean, that doesn't really make sense. Hey, there's this time that some guy loaned me $5 billion. Can't remember who it was. Or I loaned this guy $5 billion and he never repaid it. Ha ha ha. You know, I don't think that it's like that, because remember, Jesus still loves you in spite of you and all your sin. He just, the resentment or the punishment or the penalty, the justice part, you've released in getting back at them. Vengeance is the Lord's word.
Yeah. Well, there's, I mean, to your point, I think that one of the issues with actually forgetting is that you no longer are able to help somebody. You know, when Jessica and I fought through the divorce and recovered from the affair and now have a great relationship, one of the things that it has allowed us to mentally and emotionally do is put ourselves back in that situation without having all of the anxiety about it, and just go, I know exactly what you guys are going through because we went through it, and you can empathize with the situation a whole lot better, mm-hmm. right? Because you lived it. It doesn't traumatize you anymore, and so you can actually look at things from a third-party perspective, way less emotional and hope-filled because you've, you know, recovered from that and can give people that sense of there is hope in this. Mm-hmm. There is the potential for you to move beyond this and for it not to dominate you.
Right.
This too shall pass
right.
if you allow it to. And I think the only way that can happen is if you don't forget, right? But you just don't allow it to absolutely dominate your emotions and your thought process.
So to that, if you need help with that, there's Live for More Counseling here at Wells Branch Community Church. It is completely free counseling. And if she is booked, there are lots of other opportunities to find free professional counselors who can help you work through these things, who can help you work through these triggers. I know that it's super helpful for me. Also, other thing is, we keep saying, oh, there was another question. Hey, text us your questions. It goes to a free Google Voice number, so we don't know who you are. We're not gonna look you up. The number is 512-337-3767. We would love to answer your questions. A+, this was a lot of fun. Thank you so much for doing this, Trevor.
yeah, thanks for joining us. We will see you guys next week after the sermon.
All right.
See you later.
Ciao.